Welcome to the Non-Breaking Space Show. From Austin, Texas, I'm Christopher Schmidt. On today's show, we talk with Oliver Lindberg. Oliver is a freelance editor and content consultant, founder of the New Pixel Pioneers Conference, co-founder and curator of the Generate Conference, and former editor of Net Magazine. Before we get started, some things I'd like you to know. AccessU Summit is a virtual conference on digital accessibility, techniques, and policies that's taking place online on May 18th. Early bird tickets are now on sale at accessusummit.com. Make plans for CSS DevConf 2017. It takes place in New Orleans, so grab your early bird tickets for that and join Chris Coyer, Wes Boss, Harry Roberts, Sarah Drasner, Estelle Weil, and many, many more. Tickets are on sale at cssdevconf.com. The UX Design Newsletter is a weekly list of articles, tutorials, and inspiration handpicked by yours truly. Sign up at uxdesignnewsletter.com and have the link sent to you directly into your email box once a week. Speaking of email, set it and forget it with a Non-Breaking Space Show newsletter. So whenever a new show is up and ready, you'll get notified right away. All you have to do is sign up at newsletter.nonbreakingspace.tv. You can find links discussed in today's episode at nonbreakingspace.tv. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at Telejact, T-E-L-E-J-A-C-T. If you like today's show, please let others know about it. We're Non-Breaking Space Show on iTunes. Now, on with the show. But yeah, but thank you for being here. I appreciate it.
Thanks so for having
much. Yeah. I know we've tried to get you on for a while now. So it's been like, oh, this isn't working. No, okay, let's try.
Well, yeah, there were quite a few things changing in my career. So I thought now's a better time.
Right. Well, that's cool. Yeah, that's great. I guess one place I want to start out, and I think most people know you right now, as the former editor of NetMag, Net Magazine, which used to be called .net Magazine, which it's not anymore, right? It's not called that anymore.
We dropped the dot, I'm responsible for that.
Okay. So how, I guess the first question is how did you get involved with the web, and then how did you get to become the editor of Net Magazine, and how was that process?
I kind of fell into it. So I come from a journalistic background. So I did a postgraduate diploma in journalism in Cardiff in the UK. Yeah. And then I was looking for a job. And the first job that came about that kind of made sense was a staff writer position on .NET Magazine. And that was that was 2004.
Oh, wow.
So kind of started there, and I kind of made my way up in the magazine. So I did various different things. I started as a staff writer, and it was a very different magazine then. It was more like a fanzine for the internet. It didn't really have that much to do with web design at that point. And it kind of grew into web design as the audience grew up with the magazine. So slowly it became more and more web design focused and web development focused. And I did various positions. I then became deputy editor. And at some point I looked after the website only, which at that point was netmagazine.com. And then I became editor and dropped the dot. I mean, the thing with the dot is we always had some issues with, especially people in America, getting confused with the name, thinking it's got something to do with the Microsoft framework.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. But it didn't. It was just, it was meant to be something on the internet. But I always had to, answer that question. Why that framework? I said, no, it's not just that framework. It's it's HTML and it's CSS and all that kind of stuff.
Which always, I guess, kind of opens up the conversation about the sticky issue of naming things for the internet, or about the internet, because it's always a weird, sticky thing. Especially, I think now you have the problem of, not a problem, but, it's, I think it's kind of like status quo for the internet. Atomic design.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's atomic element. Like, so you get this whole issue. Then you have React and then reactive, JavaScript.
Yeah, names are hard. And, you know, gradually we just pushed the dot off the cover until it completely disappeared.
Okay. Yeah, I know there were some issues where like people's it took me a while because I always called it .NET and people still do.
I'm kind of fine with it. I mean, I don't even work anymore now, but yeah, sometimes call it .NET or .NET. So people know what it is.
Right. Yeah. It's one thing you mentioned like fanzine. Like how would you describe the content when it was a kind of a fanzine?
Oh wow! Like, so it was basically. It was reviewing modems, the old modems with a funny noise. and it covered like everything that happened on the internet, even like internet vigilantes or, how to use eBay, all kinds of stuff. Cool. Not just web design.
Yeah. Is this, because there used to be like two magazines in America. And I think that magazine was kind of published on stateside, but it was just, it used to become bundled with a CD-ROM
of the latest.
Well, like, I'm not sure it's the same magazine, but I should have found out. But I think I still have a few of those CD-ROMs.
We had this until maybe like 2 or 3 years ago, even still.
Oh wow, yeah, because like back in the early days in the '90s, like you get in the internet magazines, like these are the best free Photoshop plugins for editing web pages and web graphics and stuff like that too. And
there were all kinds of templates on there. And I think no one really used it anymore. People didn't even have like a disk drive. So what's the point of having it?
Yeah. Oh man, that's all right. Yeah, now you have to actually go out and go buy one if you want one. But as an add-on. So cool. So how would you feel as an editor? This question we get asked a lot is like, how do you stay current? But so that's my question to you is like, how do you stay on top of events, and news in general? Like, how do you keep on top of that? And then my question on top of that is just like, then what's going on, then how do you start to pick stories based off of that? Because that's just a lot of, in terms of publishing, you still have lead time in terms of developing the story and writing it. And so it might be, a while before, sir. Yeah. So, like, so that's a 2-point question. Like, how do you personally keep up to date, and then also like for your magazine?
I think a lot of it is Twitter still, although it's becoming less useful. But I use Twitter a lot still to see what people talk about, and also I use a tool called, do you know Tweeted Times?
No.
It basically creates like the biggest or most talked about stories based on your Twitter feed, Tweeted Times. And again, that's become a little less useful as well, because now most of my timeline seems to be like, politics, Trump, Brexit, all that kind of stuff. But, you still get like, when there's an article, for example, on, Smashing Magazine or a list apart, or even like a creative blog, you can see what people are talking about.
Yeah.
So I monitor Twitter and social media for that kind of stuff, but also a lot of the conference sites.
Okay.
See what the trends are on conferences also, because I create conferences as well. So I need to know, what do people talk about? What are the topics? What are some of the good speakers? And once you find someone who's a good speaker, they lend themselves to authors as well, when you commission the article. And so a lot of the articles that I commissioned for Net Magazine were based on conference talks and, people who talk at conferences and share and are kind of educators in that space.
Okay.
And then, checking out the usual sites, Smashing Magazine, A List Apart, the big sites, and then publishing as well, books by O'Reilly, or A Book Apart, Smashing Books.
I see some trends going there, A Book Apart, then Apart. O'Reilly conferences, there you go. Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I never thought about, like, I guess conferences would be a good place to find out what's what's happening, what people are talking about without even
And not just the big ones, you know, I check out meetups as well, you know. I try to go to meetups that are local here in Bristol, but also just, you know, checking out the sites of meetups. And then you see, even if someone is, you find some topics that are maybe not that much talked about, that are a bit more niche, but really interesting. And that sometimes sparks off an idea in your head and say, oh, that could make a good little article, maybe a little tutorial, maybe a little opinion piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that meetup thing is a great idea because as a conference organizer, and I was trying to find speakers for the space that was kind of newish, but it hadn't been talked about much. But so I actually went looking for meetups in high density cities like California, like San Francisco, Silicon Valley, and then New York. And then looking to see what speakers they had in the background, and then trying to find people who've already spoken about these topics. And so that was one of my tricks of the trade. I was like, oh, damn, here we go.
It's a good way of finding new speakers as well, you know, because, you know, some of the big conferences, you see the same name again, you know, understandably. But sometimes you can spot, you know, kind of discover new talent at a meetup.
Yeah, and that's another question. Like, you know, we'll go back to the conferences. Because you're co-founder of the Generate Conference, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you have a new conference, Pixel Pioneers, is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about, this is the thing that we always get asked about speakers, is that how do you become a speaker? Like, how does someone who is in the industry wants to become a speaker if they, you know, want to overcome that fear of speaking, public speaking, and want to share what they know, which is a great thing, which is awesome. Like, we love speakers because, you know, it is very stressful to speak in front of your peers, but people who do want to do it, and we love that people like want to step up and do it. And we also want to make sure it's like as least stressful every time as possible. Mm-hmm. How does someone go about becoming a speaker, like on your radar?
I think it's you know, if people, I mean, they can just email me if it's just me personally. You know, for example, with both Generate and Pixel Pioneers, it's basically like an open call for proposals. Mm-hmm. So accept proposals, and then people email in, and I check out the proposal, and sometimes that leads to a talk, and I can check out the speaker, especially if they include like links to slide decks or like previous talks that they've given. So I get an idea. But generally, it's, you know, a lot of conferences have calls for proposals, and these are being shared, you know, massively on Twitter. So people should just try it out, you know, and send out proposals to various conferences and see what happens. If, you know, if it's not the right fit for one conference, it might be for another one. And as I said, you know, again, meetups are a great way of starting public speaking, because you know, it's a smaller audience and you're more likely to get a speaking gig. So it's probably not as nerve-wracking to stand in front of, like, you know, just 25 people,
right,
compared to, like, you know, about 500 or something like that.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people who are known speakers, or like known for speaking, not known speaker, everyone talks, but is that they actually go, if they're going to do a conference, or like they are going to speak at a conference, they usually kind of workshop it, a talk, by going to a meetup first and trying out material beforehand. So it's always good, because, like, if you are in an area, just definitely, if you haven't gone to a meetup yet, I definitely would recommend it. I know in Austin, we have just a fantastic meetup culture. There's, like, you know, there's a JavaScript meetup, and there's a Refresh meetup. That's one of the more popular ones out there. But we also
have... It's a great way of trying out new material. Like, I recently went to the Product Tank meetup in Bristol, and I didn't realize they have like 100 meetups around the world now with Product Tank, which is amazing. And that particular meetup, Joe Leach gave like a taster of the talk that he's giving at my Pixel Pioneers conference about UX psychology. And, you know, it was only like a little, you know, 15-minute, 20-minute sneak preview. But it's great to test, you know, your material in front of, like, you know, 25 people or so on. You can see what works, what kind of jokes work or don't work, and then what people respond to. And I think that's a great way to do it.
What type of tips would you give to speakers after having run a few conferences?
how to test our new material.
I'll just say tips in general for your first public speaking.
Oh, that's a very good question. I mean, there's lots of articles and also books to read. I probably would recommend reading the book on public speaking that Laura Hogan has published for A Book Apart. But there's also lots of really good blog posts. I think there's one by, it's a little bit older, but it's called Burke and Confessions of a Public Speaker. And other than that, I think it's, you have to put a lot of preparation into it, you know, work on your slides, try it out maybe in front of friends, try out, you know, because you need to, they need to be like a certain length. So yeah, it's just, you know, practice. I think it's just practice.
there's no secret behind it. So I think just practice is pretty much it. You know, I have a little bit of a journalist background too. I just want to know if you could talk about what goes into an issue of Net Magazine, like how much, what's the normal process of, you know, how many stories does it get written by, you know, do you have staffers and how many staffers go into it? How many authors do you commission to write stories and how, like how much, like just, you know, talk about the general, like how much time, lead time you have to publication before it, you know, deadlines and getting authors
In print are a little crazy, you know, you do it well in advance. So every issue has got like, let me just check, I think, so it's still lying around here. So 114 pages.
Yeah.
That's a lot of content. That's a lot of articles. About 6 tutorials every issue, lots of opinion pieces, some interviews and stuff like that. So what I used to do was I had like a big spreadsheet and did a lot of forward planning in that spreadsheet, put like every slot and, you know, what I wanted to commission and make sure that the balance is right, that you do a little bit of CSS every issue, a little bit of web performance, you know, just to get the balance right. And then you would start emailing people and see whether they could write the article, give them a deadline well in advance. Usually give people like a good month, if not more, to write the article. Yeah. And then this article would come in usually at the beginning of an issue cycle, which is roughly 4 weeks. And the team is a lot smaller than you might think. You know, when I edited the magazine, I had a very small team that just consisted of a production editor, an art editor, and myself. And the rest is, you know, just freelancers or, you know. And I believe it's even smaller now. It's just the editor and the rest is production and art shared across different magazines. So it's a really small, tiny, very tight operation. Yeah. But it's been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun as well. It's nice working with people, although, you know, like working with lots of different contributors that are not used to being writers, more used to doing, you know, to writing code and that kind of stuff can be challenging because people are not that used to print deadlines. Because on the web, you know, it doesn't matter when you publish, but with print, it's kind of set in stone. And, you know, a publishing company could get fined, you know, if you miss the print deadline. So no, you can't afford not running, you know, 4 pages. You know, it's always 116 pages, and that's it.
Yeah, it's always coming down. This deadline always coming down. You can't move it. But whereas the web, you're just like, if I don't need to publish it. But yeah, one thing that we talked about finding speakers is that one thing we did mention was writing a blog and writing on your own website and doing that because. I think, and particularly people who aren't used to writing, I think that's just a great way of, and you know, I'm at fault because I don't keep up my own blog with this, but for finding new speakers, you know, if you actually go out and blog and publish on your own, you know, I found speakers that way, like Zell Liu was one speaker I found because he was blogging, Leah Veru back in the day, because I kept on finding myself going to this pink, orangish website over and over again about CSS3. And I was like, well, who, cause like it was so great at branding color wise, because I kept on coming back to this color scheme that was like my retinas. I kept on thinking like, oh, you're at the site again. And then I'm like, well, let me just find out who this person is. And I was just like, because I keep on coming back to the site, obviously, because my eyes kept on being shocked by it. So I think that's one thing, just like people.
Definitely. If someone is a good writer and is quite prolific at writing and blogging, chances are that they are a good public speaker as well, because they are experts in their field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I keep on failing to make time to write, and so it says a lot when someone actually like one takes time to write what they've learned, which is always great for our industry. But
and some people are amazing. You know, some people are so prolific. I'm amazed. You know, one example, like Sarah Drasner, she just churns this stuff out, and it's all like really amazing, high quality stuff. And says, "Wow, where does she find the time?" And she's great as well.
Yeah, she's amazing. Yeah, and so I didn't know. Yeah, I met Sarah at CC's DevConf a couple of years ago, and when she won Best Of, and it was just, and I've been, you know, of course, been talking to her since then. I've just been amazed at how prolific she is. It's just been amazing. But you don't have to be as prolific by just sharing what you know.
Yeah.
If you want to be speaking and stuff like that. But I would definitely say the best thing is to invest in yourself in terms of if you want to be a speaker, just keep finding your own domain. It doesn't have to be crazy snazzy looking, but just make sure you keep on publishing and sharing the URLs via Twitter and social media and some of that too. So people,
I think a good approach is to become like a subject matter expert. So find your own little niche, and then you become known for this niche, and then people come back to you again and again for your advice, for your expertise.
I have no advice for how to become a niche person, because I'm more of a generalist. I'm like, I like everything. I don't like.
Yeah. Same here.
And when you were an editor, how did you decide to pick like that, you know, the cover story or the main themes for a magazine, for an issue? Because like, you know, you gotta put something on the cover you know, every month. You know, what's gonna be the main draw for it? And we discussed it's not gonna be a CD-ROM anymore because we got rid of those. so what kind of like, how did you like is it gonna be, you know, is it gonna be WordPress this month, or is it gonna be
the cover story is tough because it has to be kind of mainstream. It has to appeal to as many people as possible. And in the case of Net Magazine, it had to be a topic that you could illustrate in a way. And some cover stories are really difficult to illustrate. So some of the ones that we went back to again and again was CSS. That seemed to work. WordPress worked as well, but then started not to be as popular. For some reason, typography did not work, which is kind of strange.
Oh, man, sad. Yeah.
And it helps if it's a very obvious topic, a topic that you can kind of, you know, immediately what the story is about. And, you know, kind of thinking, oh, I wonder what this is, you know, as obvious as possible. That's usually the best one. We had a few, like, about responsive design that did really well. And then, you know, backed issues. Sometimes, you know, although there's no CD-ROM anymore, you can still put the magazine in a bag and give away, like, for example, a supplement. We did a few supplements on topics like e-commerce, content, email marketing, and responsive design. And they were usually done in association with a sponsor, you know, to be able to have a higher budget. And then basically it was just an extension of the magazine, like a supplement with another 16 pages or so covering, again, like tutorials, opinion pieces on that particular subject. And that it was always a good draw because, you know, it's this perceived value. You're getting like another little magazine. That works.
I'm a sucker for those value adds. So,
and then newsstand is tough. Newsstand has become really difficult for magazines, and you know, it's print, isn't it? It's just print. Print is hard these days.
Yeah, I mean, I must admit, like I've given up on. I love web design books, but I've kind of held off on buying web design books and going for ebooks. But however, I find more value in learning from books when I have the physical book.
Yeah.
I just don't have the bookshelf space to maintain it. I feel like I sort of have a word design museum already with all these books from, like, you know, the 90s and everything like that. So I don't really like feel like...
What always worked for Net Magazine as well and books about web design, we spend a lot of our time in front of the screen. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to, you know, just sit down on the sofa, on the loo or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and just read something physical.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I love the physical nature of it. I'm a subscriber through the magazines app or the newsstand app on mm-hmm. on the thing, just because I've got old Wired issues, like the first Wired issues, and I don't want to give those up just yet, but
yeah,
because that's when they were really crazy in terms of design. Yeah. crazy awesome. But
should see some of the like old Net magazines. They were crazy. So if you go back like about more than 10 years, there were some really crazy ones.
Oh, nice. I will. I think we should probably go. So let's talk about Pixel Pioneers. Is this your conference that you're doing?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yeah. I founded it. I left Future late last year. So I quit my job because it was just time.
Yeah.
And since then, I've been doing some freelance work, content marketing, editing, freelance editing, that kind of stuff. Still involved in the Generate conferences as well as on a freelance basis. You know, I create those and share those. But I wanted to have my own as well, you know, my own conference. And I wanted to create something that's maybe a slightly different tier and slightly more affordable than other conferences, and also do something that's not necessarily in the huge cities and the capitals, and bring something to, you know, some vibrant communities elsewhere. So the first one I'm doing is in Bristol, which is just about 50 minutes from where I live here, because Bristol's got a really vibrant digital community. There's a lot of digital agencies, a lot of web design agencies, there's a lot of graphic design agencies, and there's quite a few startups as well. There's quite a lot happening in Bath and Bristol. So that's the first one. That will be on the 22nd of June. Mm-hmm. And then I'm also planning one in Belfast because, you know, same thing. Belfast has got a really vibrant scene, but they haven't really got a conference anymore. You know, they used to have Build.
Yeah.
And Build was a really popular conference, but, you know, Build disappeared a few years ago. There were a few one-off conferences. I thought it was time again to bring something to Belfast. So these conferences are, you know, one-day, one-track conferences, 8 talks, a few side events around it. I'm not doing, like, proper workshops for the first one, but I'm introducing workshops for the second one in Belfast. And so, yeah, I'm quite excited about it. It's just, well, that's my own. It's nerve-wracking as well.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
As you may know, like conference organizing.
Yeah, I love, we did a couple conferences in our hometown, which is after several years of doing them elsewhere. And so it was really nice to not have to travel to put on a conference. So,
So far, you know, most of the attendees that I've booked already are in this area, Bath and Bristol, but I've also had a few bookings already from like people elsewhere, like Belgium and Netherlands and stuff. And it's really nice that people check it out and, you know, have the confidence that it will be good and book a ticket. It's nice.
Yeah, it's always, you know, like after doing it for several years, it's always nice when people, like, you know, attend. thank you for coming out. What type of themes are you with this, like, you know, when you pick speakers, you kind of pick a, you know, Zelman talks about like being like a playlist. Mm-hmm. And so, like, what type of themes or notes do you want to hit, if you will, to carry the analogy and metaphor further? Pixel Pioneers.
So the focus is web, UX, and front-end development. So for the first one in Bristol, we're covering email coding, you know, with Mark Robbins. We are covering some UX psychology with Joe Leach. We have Jessica Rose talk about automated development, which is becoming more and more an issue as well. You know, everything's being automated. Then we've got something about service design by Lily Dart. And web animation. Web animation is also a big topic that I try to cover at pretty much all of the conferences that I do. There's going to be a talk by Adrian Zumbrunnen from Google that I'm really looking forward to, and data visualization. Yeah. We have Nadi Bremer give a talk, and I saw her for the first time last year. And again, she's one of these people who have come out of nowhere, you know. And now you see her at quite a lot of conferences, but her work is just, you know, stunning, the stunning data visualization work. And kind of like, it always surprises me when people come out of nowhere and say, where have you been before? And why have I not heard about you beforehand? Because, you know, you've been doing this for a while, but, you know, suddenly, you know, they're on your radar, and they write a lot. You see their work being referenced. You see them pop up at other conferences, and that's really nice.
Yeah, I continuously surprises me how not continuously surprises, but like I think a better way of saying it is this, like I like seeing how popular web animation is becoming, and it continues to grow. So that's that, and then data visualization.
The last couple of years.
Yeah, it's and I always thought animation was, you know, when Apple put it into CSS, I thought like, well, that was I enjoyed it because I'm a CSS guy, but I didn't really thought it would belong more in JavaScript, but definitely like it's finally getting its due credit. So that too. So in terms of speakers, like you find speakers, like I think we talked about Sarah earlier, but I feel like she's been in the industry forever. Not forever, but she's been around the industry for a long time. And then like, why haven't we heard of her before, you know, before now? Yeah. It's like, it's been great. So just, it sounds like this, it's kind of like a general web conference, but more like, you know, but definitely so specific areas, you know, UX and front ends with that too.
Yes, cool. As you say, you know, we both come from like kind of like editorial background, and I'm interested in the wide range. You know, I think I would get a little bored if it was just one niche, just looking at Node.js only, or something like that. It's interesting, but you know, I'm interested in this, and then this is kind of related to it. And sometimes you come up with a lineup, and you find that the talks actually kind of refer to each other. There's a little bit of like design systems, and kind of works with like there's components, and then there's, you know, animations. It kind of all fits into a bigger picture, which is really nice on these like more general conferences.
Even we used to do a general conference called In Control, and that was kind of a weird conference. Not a weird conference, but it was just like, it was, you know, we tried to do like soft skills the first day, and then like, you know, hard technologies the next day. But then I just felt like it's like a little bit too general, and sometimes and so I felt like we couldn't find a right groove for the conference. And so
I also find, you know, when you have a conference and there's a lot of code, it's a little relentless. You know, no one can like listen to code for a whole day. So it's nice to have like a few talks that break it up a little bit, that are maybe a little bit more inspirational than practical. And talking about, you know, what you said about soft skills, you know, one of the other talks that we have at the Bristol conference is Tobias Arlin from, he designs Minecraft. He's going to talk about how you can get your clients to listen, which is a really important topic, really. You know, it's not really code, and it's not, you know, it's not like a hard skill, but it's important.
In fact, one of the talks last year at CSS DevConf, which actually won an award because we do like the best of, was how not to get burnt out by Alicia Sedlock. Yeah. And it was interesting that one that made the cut, because we do double blind voting, but it was amazing. Like, wow, okay, it was like not a super technical talk, which is like, you know, we have, you know, not that it has to be, but it's like developer entitled. But it was kind of interesting to see a talk about like, you know, professional development, but also like personal care to be in there. And so like, it's not really a code heavy talk.
Yeah.
But it was kind of a, it was just an interesting thing to see that.
I think it's important to have these talks in there. You know, if you have a conference, you know, have one or two of these talks in there, you know, covering different topics that are more at the sideline, but still important, you know, whether it's this, what you've just said, or like diversity and all that kind of stuff. You know, it all helps.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. Yeah. And then, but you still work for, I just want to use this time. Great. Cause like we're two conference organizers. I feel like I should be like being your brain about like, how to, develop conferences better for that. So do you have any general word of advice for people who do want to start their own conference or any wisdom about, running a conference?
Oh, well, not to give up. it can be frustrating sometimes. And, you know, you go through different challenges, whether that's, you know, speakers canceling or, you know, you go through this slump in the middle where you don't sell that many tickets. You know, you sell a whole chunk of tickets at the beginning, when you have your early bird phase, you know, then you have a slump and then it goes back up. It's just not to lose faith, I think, you know, and sticking to it and do what you can to get the word out. And if you believe in it, get some other people to help you spread the word about it. Get some good media partners as well that can help with that. Because, you know, chances are the audience are there. And if you believe in it, just stick to it, even if it can be hard sometimes.
Yeah, it amazes me. I think getting media partners is crucial because it never fails that we find people who reach out to us after a conference and said, like, I didn't know your conference existed, you know? And yeah. I feel like it's kind of weird. No, not that I feel like, you know, like they need to hear about a conference. Sometimes like I feel like you should hear about it. I feel like we just spent, you know, a lot of my effort through the year, you know, trying to promote it. Exactly. And I feel like I went on top of the mountain and I screamed as much as I could. Like, I have a conference and I think it's pretty okay. You should check it out. But, and the fact that people like still didn't hear is just like, you know, just making sure people know about it. Cause I think the audience is there. And
I think it's about using as many channels as possible. You know, do social media on different channels. Do it on Twitter, Facebook, whatever works best for your audience, LinkedIn or whatever network. Then build up a mailing list. I think building up a mailing list is quite a good way of growing like a dedicated and quite loyal and engaged user base. Find out who are the kind of like opinion formers or leaders in your area, media partners, but also, you know, there's some media partners that are kind of local. So for this conference that I'm doing in Bristol, I'm looking at who's kind of local. You've got media partners that are like, you know, SidePoint and Creative Block, which are very international, but it's also useful to, you know, there's this like thing called TechSpark. In this area, which is like it's about investing in, you know, the digital community in this area in the southwest of England, and they have a website. So I've reached out to them, and they've published an article, an interview with me about the conference. So it's about getting the word out in different areas.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, advertising is key. That word out. So cool.
And you can do a lot of that stuff with a really small marketing budget, you know, with basically no marketing budget. With Pixel Ponies, it's just me, you know, so I haven't really got any money to spend on a lot of advertising.
Yeah.
So it's word of mouth, going to meetups, telling people directly about the conference and that kind of stuff. For the speakers, I have like a big spreadsheet where I just write everything down because, you know, once it gets to a point where, like this year, I'm involved in 5 conferences, and it's very difficult to lose track. So it's just write down as much as you can. And I have different columns for, you know, speakers that have accepted, speakers have declined. You know, sometimes write the reasons down as well. Mm-hmm. Write down as, you know, how much certain speakers charge, because, you know, chances are next year you can go back to them if it didn't work out this year. And, you know, maybe it works out then for whatever the reason was for them not doing it. But also like lots of ideas, you know, when I look through sites and, you know, conference sites, also like, you know, publications, I come across a name and think, oh, that could be, possibly could be an interesting speaker. Just write down the name so you don't forget it. And then you can refer back to it. It's also very useful, you know, when people cancel, and they do. Then you have kind of a backup list of people that you can approach.
What is your craziest conference story?
Craziest? That's a very good question.
Right, well, you think about it, like, I'll tell you mine. Yeah. I'll tell you one of mine. This is just, it has to be crazy, but just like one of the most stressful things is that we used, like I said, we had to do an InControl conference, and the InControl conference used to be not a workshop-y conference, like because one of the things that I'm kind of toying with the idea, like actually with my partner, like mostly her idea, but is just do, instead of do a conference of hours or half hour sessions, actually just do a conference of like half day sessions, half day workshops. Sessions used to be like 2 hours max, like it was an hour and 40 minutes, hour and a half. Sessions, which is like the idea behind that was like we want to deep dive in talks, because like sometimes you get a talk and it doesn't really, it kind of just some more of an intro to a topic, and it doesn't really deep dive into some of the issues and concerns with that. So I asked a lot of people and I'm really grateful for they did, but they actually like extended their talk, or we could also do like a hands-on activity if they wanted to, if they didn't want like create like half hour new material or whatever. And some of that too. So basically, essentially, I had like this speaker. All the speakers were kind of like locked in for an hour and a half to an hour and 40 minutes talk. And so driving to the venue when the conference was like the next day, I get a phone call from someone who back in the day, back then, you couldn't, they can't make phone calls, but like they called me and the phone went off. And I was like, well, there's a problem because he should not be able to call me because they should be up in the air flying, you know, because basically a spreadsheet, like I know when they're flying and coming in, because as you say, like, you know, the spreadsheets is and so I called and it's like he can't make it because of a medical emergency. And so I had to go track down a speaker who could speak for an hour and a half at least and fill that hole within 24 hours in a town that's not really it's in the city is a lot better now than it was, you know, 10 to 15 years ago in terms internet businesses, web design, development, stuff like that. So I had to go track down a speaker who could actually fill that hole. And it couldn't be someone else because it was a general conference at the time too. So it had to be a specific thing that it could not be another topic that another 8 and 10 speakers are already talking on. And so that was like one of the most stressful times, just like trying to find someone who could fill that. And I was like, and at one point it was going to be me. And I was like, yeah. I was like, I don't know who, what are we talking about, but this is, but yeah, so I was frantically trying to fill that. So, but yeah, so knock on wood, that doesn't happen anymore.
I have one.
Okay.
So last year at Generate San Francisco, we had some terrible AV issues. We obviously did an AV check and the company did everything, all the setup, everything in rehearsal was fine. And then it happened at the beginning of the conference, and the first talk, couldn't hear the speaker, and the slides didn't sync up to the screen. Took them about like 5 or 10 minutes to sort it out, which is like an eternity if you're the conference organizer or the speaker. Yeah. But they managed to sort it, so it was fine. Rest of the conference all day was really worked well. Everything worked fine. And then it happened again just before the closing keynote. And it went on forever. Slides didn't look right. Mic didn't work properly. And everyone was just sitting there. And it's such a stressful situation to be in. Because it's out of your hands, you know, you've paid bunch of people to look after this, you know. As you know, with conference organizing, it's not cheap. So you're trusting them to sort it out. And just it took absolute ages. And the closing keynote was by Mike Monteiro, He was getting a little bit impatient as well, I think, and just. But he's a really good sport. And then he just decided, I don't know what's going on here, but let's just do like an impromptu Q&A. So he did. Started talking. And people were asking questions, and he gave some really, really good advice. It wouldn't have been there. We wouldn't have done a Q&A really with Mike Montero because we didn't have the time. So in this way, people got like a 20 minutes, maybe even half an hour Q&A. And then they finally managed to work it out, although the slides still looked a bit weird, like the colors were all inverted. But he did the talk. So he got twice as much Mike Montero for the same money.
It was stressful. Yeah, and it's always good. Like you find the speakers who can roll with it too. It's in terms of
And it ended up with like the AV company being really embarrassed, giving us half the money back, mm-hmm. and sacking one of their people.
Oh wow! Mm. That's how it goes sometimes. So it's not for the faint of heart. That's for sure.
No, definitely not.
So one of the things I do want to say is like I've used spreadsheets more than I have ever before, thanks to conference organizing. Like go to your point before is like spreadsheets and everything. Yeah. It's just like man.
Yeah, you live in the spreadsheets. You need to.
Yeah, I live in the email box and the spreadsheets. Yeah, when I do work with conferences, so
yeah.
It's
yeah a lot of email.
Yeah, yeah. They keep on saying email is dead, but I still.
God, yeah.
I'm still using it. So
it doesn't really work without it.
Yeah,
sure. There's a lot of chasing, both in editing. And writing articles, especially if you want input from other people and you want some quotes for your article. There's, majority of my time is spent chasing people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's pretty much how it goes. I think that's how my editors usually feel. So
it makes things interesting as well. The call for papers for the Belfast conference is still open.
Cool. Awesome.
Till the 1st of May, so people can still submit if they like.
Okay, and what's the URL for that?
Pixelpioneers.co.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that sounds like a great one. And again, you're looking for is it more UX, UI type of talks, or is that?
That's similar. I mean, that conference is on the 16th of November in Belfast. And again, it's, I want to show like a wide range, UX, UI, a little bit of code. Mm-hmm. Maybe some soft skills that we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
Kind of stuff.
Cool. Yes. All right, cool. And then how can people find you on the internet? And
My website is oliverlindberg.com. And Twitter handle is the same thing, @OliverLindberg. And then, find details about me on a pixelpioneers.co site as well.
Okay. Cool. Well, awesome. Well, I appreciate you being here.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun.